All right. Thank you. So I want to thank everybody for coming. Today we'd like to talk to you a little bit about how to make the most of your SRE toolbox. My name is Mark Duquette. I work for IBM Bluemix DevOps Services as an SRE lead for monitoring and logging and things like that.
And I'm Tom Schmidt, senior software developer, again, IBM DevOps Services, also recently part of our new SRE team. Been working about 8 years in the compiler area doing test automation and stuff like that, and have sort of recently transitioned into this SRE role.
Yeah. And so prior to becoming, you know, SRE engineers, which has been happened maybe about 6 months ago for our team, Tom and I both worked on common infrastructure. And what that was basically building out tools, frameworks, setting up deployments of basically facilitating the development work, facilitating continuous delivery, continuous integration, performance testing, those types of things. So, you know, about 6 months ago, as I mentioned, we were transitioned from doing common infrastructure types of things to becoming SRE engineers. So we're building out a new SRE team. And one of the things we wanted to look at is, how do we make use of everything we just spent a year and a half doing? We didn't want to throw anything away. It was pretty valuable to the business. And we wanted to find out how valuable it would be to sort of our next journey. And so what we'd like to talk to you a little bit about today is the journey that we went on, or that we're still moving towards, some of the decisions we made, some of the tools we use, some of the tools we've repurposed, and really to put together our toolbox and sort of provide some information about here's what we did on our new journey. So the first thing we started out looking is taking a look at everything that we had done before. You know, what are the things that we have which we might be able to reuse? What are the different characteristics of those tools? How could they be put together? And really look at sort of what do we have to start with? Okay, so again, when we became site reliability engineers, you know, we took responsibility for everything. Okay, and a lot of our infrastructure pieces provided us some insight into that bucket of everything, and we wanted to make sure it was good. We'll talk a little bit about sort of implementing for reuse. So we do have some, we're going to explain a bit about of our experiences along our journey, how we decided what to use, what are the components we thought were great and could be repurposed for different things, but also how the reliance on the existing infrastructure sort of changed and morphed over time. So where we started with it day one, we're quite a ways along the journey today. Talk a little bit about, you know, how did we put it together? What was our thought process? Making sure that we weren't tied to any one solution. So we'll talk a little bit about how we've iterated and evolved over things. We went into this knowing that our first solution is not going to be our final solution. It's a journey. Evolve, iterate. Don't get too attached to any one solution because you're probably going to throw it away. Okay, but in doing so, that's still important to do.
Right, so right off the bat, there were a few key concepts we wanted to keep in mind. We felt that it would be really important to try to identify those SRE areas that we could provide the most value or some immediate impact, but they wouldn't take very long to get off the ground. We wanted to hit the ground running, we wanted to get our hands dirty, and we wanted to provide value. You know, not only to our stakeholders who had put their faith and set up the SRE team, but also to the developers that we were working with, right? We wanted to sort of start this communication with developers that started with us providing value to them. I think in the past with some, you know, our previous operations teams, sometimes there's this conflict between the development community and the operations community. So what we wanted to do is, right off the bat, like I said, find somewhere where we could have an immediate impact for the developers, start that communication flow, they would start to trust that we were providing value to them and start to work with us more collaboratively. So we had that in mind. We started to think about, what tools do we already have in place, right? We didn't have very long to start providing this value, so we wanted to reuse what we had, as Mark sort of started to go into. and start to look deeply into those tools. What was the original purpose? And again, we'll talk about what some of these tools are later on. What was the original purpose of the tool? And how could we adapt that maybe to apply to multiple other areas? Or how could we tweak it to do a better job of what it was doing initially? Again, Mark sort of referenced that V1 is never the complete solution. So we wanted to have no shame in throwing away stuff, no shame in bringing up stuff and letting people take a look at it right off the bat. So that we get that feedback. We say no rework is going to be wasted, right? You're always going to be learning from what you do, and you're going to build a better solution if you try to let people see your initial attempt instead of trying to build it and design it perfectly from the ground up.
Okay. All right. So the first part of the journey is, what do we do first? Okay, so we didn't want to sort of do the proverbial boil the ocean and try and tackle every single problem at once. You're never going to be successful that way, I think, as we all sort of know. You have to pick. You have to be strategic in what you try to address first. So the first thing we wanted to do is to really try and target some areas where visibility was there. Our organization just started this new team. We wanted to show again to the business that it was worth it. It's just not something that we're going to sort of throw together. So I want to make sure that our visibility was there in a way that we could show progress quickly, but also show value quickly, and show that we have the ability to pivot on a solution. So again, we didn't want to go too far down the path, get tied to that solution, and be stuck and say, we've got to start over from scratch again. We want to look at certain things for, what are the things we don't want to do? I'm sure, there's all sorts of different things in this area where you don't want to spend hours and hours of your time, doing things manually. I mean, my goal is really to not even have to press the button and go home. The button should be pressed for me, and that's really something we wanted to look at doing. So, looking at what are these manual processes that we had to do or things that were repetitive. Again, mostly looking at our common infrastructure pieces, but also, the way our team was structured is. We had the common infrastructure team, but we also had a classical operations team. And the classical operations team, they're sitting at the keyboard and installing patches and things. So we want to try and understand what are the things that they're doing that we want to help address as well. Again, applying patches, deploying services, configuring environments. We want to automate all those types of things and really try and look and see what was repetitive. Lastly, we want to look at what are the complex and time-consuming tasks that we have? Taking inventory always takes a long time if it's not automated. Everything's always changing. There's lots of things you need to gather out of there. Metrics reconciliation. So as I mentioned to start off, I deal with monitoring. I do not want to be doing metrics reconciliation with monitors. It takes too long. It's not a good use of my time. So we want to try and address, again, what are the things that we can do quickly in that area? And that goes along with service monitoring. I'll talk a little bit about service monitoring, what I mean by that. We did have tools. Again, we had an operations team that had classical operational monitoring on our services. When is something working? When is something not? So I'm not really talking about that type of service monitoring there. And I'll get into sort of an experience that we had to set that up. But overall, one of the tenets is reduce toil. Reduce the amount of time that you're manually doing something. Because your time could be better spent doing something else. And that was really one of the things we put into, identifying, the areas to tackle. Okay, so we started looking at, what's in our current toolbox. What are the characteristics of the different areas that we had? What can we combine with other tools? Do we have things that duplicate functionality? Do we have things that... are configurable. Can I put different parts and pieces together in such a way to come up with a new solution? Keeping in mind, though, we want to be careful that what we were doing, again, it wasn't too complex. So here we are. So Tom and I, we had a couple other folks in our common infrastructure team. We knew how our tools worked, and we knew what didn't work with the tools. What we wanted to avoid is coming up with our favorite tools that were so complex that we had to spend all of our time rebuilding them and rewriting them so others in this new organization could start using them and being successful with them. So we want to be careful that they weren't too complex, because we really thought the more complex they were, the longer they're going to take to adapt to a new purpose, and longer it's going to take somebody to be successful with them. And again, our goal is to be visible, show progress early, and ultimately reduce toil.
Right, and in sort of keeping some of the tools that we were working with and developing as simple as possible, keeping in mind as we were developing them how they might be extensible and how they could be configurable for other people to reuse. Again, we didn't want myself and Mark and the two or three other people that we were working with to be the only ones using the tools. We wanted the entire organization to be using them. We wanted every single development component to be using them, or at least getting some value out of them. So by making them simple, by making them configurable, we were able to have some success, and it's, of course, still an evolving framework, but you know, that's what we had in mind when we went in, and that's still sort of the mantra we've been trying to follow.
Yeah. You know, so again, to sort of just sort of summarize some of the areas in here, so we had test frameworks. That's what we built as part of a common infrastructure team. We bought test frameworks that enabled, you know, that we could, that would enable testing, enable different things to do. You know, we had continuous integration systems, CI systems, so we had a bunch of Jenkins servers that were set up. At its root, Jenkins schedules jobs. That's what it does. That's what it's good at. You know, so that was definitely a keeper in our toolbox. We had some scripts that would be getting run, again, with the classical operations team. We started looking at some things to help maintain a secure posture. You know, reporting on certificates, reporting on different pieces of the infrastructure. Single-use scripts. Everybody's got them. Everybody has their favorite sets of tools that they have that are personal, their favorite bash script, favorite Perl script or whatever. Everything was on the table for looking at this. And then deployment automation. So some of the things we had started looking at were, you know, how could we deploy entire environments to help us with the common infrastructure piece, and started looking at some automation about how we would go about doing that. So these were all sorts of possibilities that we had in there. So as I mentioned before, you know, when I mentioned service monitoring, you know, it wasn't mostly operational monitoring. What we're really looking at is tracking our availability. And this was sort of the first project that we took on to really show value quickly. You know, we wanted to look at not necessarily whether services were up or down. We wanted to start collecting metrics. How long was a service up or down? How can we show that easily in executive dashboards and things where, you know, Tom and I both, you know, sort of have a saying is when we present metrics, we don't want to have those metrics cause questions to be asked. We need the metrics to tell a story. And those metrics then tell the story that we want to have told. You know, so we started looking at, you know, tracking availability, tracking the customer's perception of the service. Are things working from their perspective? The way the ecosystem was set up is, you know, a bunch of different microservices. They all had status endpoints that our monitors would ping to sort of say, am I healthy, am I not healthy? Pretty straightforward. From our toolbox, well, we had Jenkins because we knew we needed to have something that could sample data. Okay, so we had that. That would schedule some jobs. Our functional test framework that we had, it's not the lightest of frameworks. You know, it's a Java-based framework. We use TestNG as sort of the harness to drive things. It's pretty configurable. And we liked how we could generate our own reporters and everything else like that.
Right. And here the key leverage that we were getting out of the test framework here was going beyond that sort of status endpoint. Is the thing, can I ping or can I not ping this service? But extending that out to, you know, can the user effectively, you know, is this thing usable? You know, and so that's where we sort of tried to leverage the test framework that was testing that, you know, system level usability in order to integrate that with some of our monitors.
Yeah. So they were basically and essentially, you know, what we're looking at here is when we're tracking the availability is basic synthetics monitoring, simple scripted monitoring to do. But again, our purpose here was not to rewrite everything from scratch. We had stuff that was there. We could show progress fairly quickly. So our initial approach here was to just monitor the site using the existing code, basically creating simple test cases for that. The test status was replicated as the monitoring status. You know, test passed, the test failed. If we go back a few slides, one of the pieces that was important was that the tools we have are deterministic. It either works or it doesn't. There was no gray area. And that made it important with this code here to say, well, monitor, the way we were looking at this was it's either working from a customer's perspective or it's not. There's no halfway. And that was one of the things we thought was important. We use these to schedule the tests. Notice the test would run every minute. That was our frequency. If a test ran, if a test ran longer than 30 seconds, we would fail it. We would say it's a failure and capture that as a failure. So again, our operational monitoring is working great. Our service is running, but we're looking at this from the customer's perspective. And that's really what we were trying to capture. Okay. So with this tool, we iterated over this, for quite some time. Got a lot of feedback. A lot of feedback from the folks who would want to see, not just see the result, but look at the data and make business decisions off the data. Another goal that they had is they wanted to get away from slideware. Because as we all know, as soon as you put something on a slide, it's out of date. So this is all real time. And what we ended up able to do is, we had these test cases. Originally, they didn't really report to, logged into any databases or anything else like that. It was running off Jenkins, test status works, great. So we started logging things into Postgres. That was another tool we added to our toolbox. And what it allowed us to do is to provide the data on the overall availability of our services from the outside in, which then allowed us to integrate that with our incident management system at the end. Okay, it was just a very easy tracking system. It was nothing more than just linking an outage or an incident with the record. Very simple. Didn't take us anything. There was no extra tools to do. There's plenty of tools out there that does all this stuff, but again, we want to see what we could reuse. And allowed us to track our deployment budgets. So because we knew what was going on in the back end, again, from our customer's perspective, we could track overall deployment budgets and hence our SLA. Now, going through this, some of the things we learned to go through this is really not so much how to put the tools together, but which is important, but the story that we wanted the data to tell and how we wanted to tell that data, or how we wanted to tell that story, excuse me. So this solution here has already been replaced. Okay, so we used the solution file. We got a lot of good data out of it, a lot of good feedback out of it, but we no longer use it. We have a higher level monitoring event management system. We track our user workflows through other types of tools and other types of monitoring, collect our metrics in time series databases and things like that. So it's a lot more robust. It's a lot more fancy than this is. But because we went through this exercise, again, iterating over our tools, evolving our tools, we now know what we're looking for in something else. Whereas we feel if we hadn't gone through this exercise, as I mentioned, there's lots of tools out there that do these types of things, but now we know what we want to see out of the tool, and it makes that discussion a little bit easier. So sort of just to summarize that as well, too. So, we looked at the different areas and some potential tools that you could use in those areas. Basic health monitoring. Again, that's nothing more than how's your customers viewing the site. Test frameworks and functional test cases. Hopefully everybody has them. It's a great way to repurpose them. Okay, both from consumption. Is your customer successful using your site? Is your site actually running and doing what you think it's doing? System management, deployment automation, and again, test frameworks fall into that. Runbooks for system management. So as I mentioned, we had an operations team. Runbooks are a great source of your toolbox. They may not be automated, but they're prescriptive. So by being prescriptive, it's very easy to sit there if you spend the time to just automate those.
Yeah, that was actually something that came up in the very first talk in this room was talking about, initially having those valuable runbooks in place, but actually being able to replace them with automation down the road, right? They talked about even, getting rid of the NOC. They mentioned that quite a bit. So runbooks for me, when I, when I first looked at this prescriptive sort of dialogue of how to resolve any given issue, for me that was, the source of, that could be automated. This is virtually pseudocode that I'm looking at, right? So in a lot of cases, you can take a tool like runbooks that is, our runbooks anyways were manually executed, but use that as a source and as a motivation to put some automation in place. Another takeaway from this slide that I, that's important to me is it sort of showcases very briefly anyways that any one of our given tools wasn't just used for a single purpose. We were trying to apply them in as many different SRE areas as we possibly could. So we get that reuse and we get that value out of each one. Right, so one of the things we wanted to start by doing is identify exactly what the challenge was in front of us. What is it that we wanted to do, and not just what we wanted to do, but who we wanted to provide the information for. If you're providing something like a monitoring dashboard or a status dashboard, and you're providing that data to somebody like myself or who's interested in quality assurance, or if you're providing that data to a developer manager, if you're providing that data to an executive, it's going to look a lot different. You're going to want a different solution. So think a little bit about what you want to do and who you want to provide the info for. And as sort of Mark put it, what story do you want to tell? Once you have that in place, you start to brainstorm again. We've mentioned this a couple times. Brainstorm what tools you have in place. Most importantly, try it out. When you try the tool out, you're going to find out what are some of the limitations and some of the reasons you can't really apply the tool to the areas you want it to. You might also find out some of the things that the tool can do that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise. When you dig into it, Jenkins is a really good example. We started using this just as a typical job scheduler. We realized that there are a whole bunch of plugins out there that we could jam into this thing and actually get way more value out of it. So by just getting our hands dirty and starting to use the tool, trying it out, not being afraid to sort of fail with it or not really know what we were doing initially, we were able to learn really quickly and sort of expand on that. Not only that, by using it and putting something in place, putting that version one in place, we are able to get the visibility out there, right? We put it in front of the eyes of, again, the development components, in front of the execs, and got their feedback with no fear of sort of repercussion. Oh, this thing sucks. You've only been spending a month on it. It's not ready yet. Instead, we got the valuable feedback. They were able to tell us what was wrong with it, why they couldn't use it, especially from a lot of the development components, right? We put these test frameworks in place. And as I'll go through a case study in a minute, they were able to tell us very quickly why it wasn't usable for them. And then we were able to iterate on it and make something that actually provided value. So I'll talk a little bit about that experience. And as it relates to our deployment readiness and our system health. So initially, the test frameworks we had in place, we worked on them for probably about a year and a half, and Mark had worked on them before that. Long before the SRE team got set up. And we put something in place that the common infrastructure team was very familiar with. The results from that data were these somewhat cryptic console logs, and really we were the only ones that could try to parse it and really understand the root cause out of some of these failures, really understand what the regression was. As a result, when we tried to sort of push this out to the different development components and get them using it, We wanted them to be able to consume it, to be able to see a result, and we didn't want to have to intervene every time there was a failure. The feedback we got was it looked just like that image up there to them. They looked at it and said, we need your help. We don't know what the hell this output is. It's just a bunch of garbage to us, right? So that was good feedback, right? Even though it wasn't working for them, it allowed us to identify, okay, well, we've got to figure out, how to do root cause analysis within our automation and within our test frameworks. Another thing that we initially sort of didn't do all that well was the scheduling of the tests that were being run. So we were scheduling these via Jenkins, which was useful, but we were only scheduling them intermittently. We weren't really syncing them up with the deployments, and as a result, we'd have development components deploying to the dev environment and eventually to the staging environment. We'd have maybe, five or six different deploys from every component in between test runs, so it became very difficult to identify where the regression was. And that was the feedback that we got about it. You know, there was some benefits to it. We did have a relatively comprehensive set of tests in place that provided good system test coverage. It provided a good image of whether or not the site was usable after the tests ran, but it didn't give that feedback right away, and it didn't give that feedback in a way that anybody could consume it. So we started thinking about what other tools we had in place that could help us here. Well, when we're communicating with our development community, 99% of that communication is done through Slack. So we wanted to see, you know, how could we leverage that? How could we integrate some of the test frameworks we had? How could we integrate a Jenkins plugin to send messages directly to the development team? Slack seemed like a really good option. Some of the development teams at the time were also using Sauce Labs to drive some of their UI testing. Well, Sauce Labs provides video replay of UI test cases, right? So this is a really good way for them to be able to just look and see, they can see the failure in front of them, right? So it becomes much more obvious than some long set of console text. And what we ended up doing was rebuilding that initial test framework. So again, this was pretty much rebuilt from the ground up. We had one in place, and we rebuilt it with the focus of being able to provide consumable results. So we didn't want to provide a console log that was 6 pages long. We wanted to provide the exact API endpoint that was being called. We wanted to provide the exact payload that was being sent with it, and we wanted to get the response back. In addition to that, we wanted to make sure we understood the context of where that failure happened, so that we could sort of identify which component was most likely responsible, right? So, you know, at a different stage, depending on, we're working with tool chains. So when you're adding a service to a tool chain versus creating a tool chain, a preloaded, templated tool chain, it could have a very similar failure, but be the result of a different component, causing the regression. So by putting some context around where the failures were happening, really streamlining the output, we were able to send a direct Slack message immediately when the test failed. And we'd send it right to the component that owned it, they could take a look at it, and they could understand the result as soon as possible, without having to dig through any long, difficult console log. So that was a big win for us. Another thing we were able to do is leverage our DevOps pipeline. So the deployment pipeline that we were using had a means of integrating test coverage. So we were able to integrate a system test stage, into each one of our development deployment pipelines. That way, whenever any of our, any component deployed, as they deployed to dev, as they deployed to integration, each step along the way, our full suite of system tests would run against that, and we'd be able to identify that they were the one that caused the regression as soon as possible. The last thing we were able to do is rebuild our dashboards. So we had mentioned briefly a set of dashboards we had that our common infrastructure team was trying to consume. It was useful for us. It allowed us to track what defect was associated with a specific test case, but we were really the only ones looking at it. So we repurposed the dashboard. We made sort of an image of each environment, red, green, yellow, something obvious that anybody could consume so they could have a general idea of the health of that environment. And we also added some functionality so the developers could get use out of it. We added the ability to run the test cases directly from the dashboard. We added a history of the test case so that they could take a look and see how it had failed in the past and get some insight out of that. And we also added a version portion of the dashboard that allowed us to understand which version of each component was currently in each one of these environments. So by taking in some of the feedback of what a lot of the development components would have considered a failure early on, we were able to use that feedback and build something so that not only were they getting insight from the dashboard, but they were getting direct messages, very specific failure messages. And the last thing that I sort of forgot to mention is we also decided we had to document it. So we provided Java doc for the entire test framework. And as a result, each of the development components were able to write their own tests, piggybacking on this framework and getting all the value that I just talked about for free, essentially.
And to sort of extend that a little bit, too, is, so we're talking about building our toolbox. And one of the things that started happening as we were building out the toolbox and getting the feedback, we were actually changing the culture. A lot of the pieces, especially this dashboard in particular, early on, provided a lot of data and insight, which really allowed us to make decisions as, you know, what's our readiness status to actually deploy something? Have we run our full suite of tests? We know what they were running against, we know what failures, we know what to roll back. And we know what could have been the cause of a failure rather than going into something blind. Again, you know, this was a new area for us, so we want to make sure we had all the bases covered. And by doing so, it really helped change, you know, as part of building that toolbox, it really helped change sort of the culture around how we think about these tools and how, you know, system reliability is everybody's job. It's not just the job of one team, it's everybody. And that really helped us there. You know, and to continue on this thread too is, so, you know, talked a little bit about, you know, what are the pieces that are important in our toolbox. And as you'll notice, coming from a common infrastructure team, a lot of our stuff initially were frameworks, and frameworks can be sort of anything else. We do have other bits and pieces of them there, but I think this told a decent story. You know, so we were able to capture availability monitor from some simple, you know, outside in techniques. We're able to show our just general quality status using some of the tools. But the other piece we really understand is, so not just from a readiness standpoint or as a can somebody use my service standpoint, it's we want to sort of provide consumption monitoring of our services. And what we mean by that is actual real customer workflows. So can a customer go from instantiating my service all the way through to actually doing something useful? Okay. As Tom mentioned, we build tool chains. Those tool chains have lots of different components into them, but ultimately their goal is to take a service I'm developing and deploy that service and deploy it successfully and know that it deployed. That was sort of our next part of our journey. And it's actually the part of the journey that we're currently on today, to iterate over different solutions about how best to implement this and how to make it work for everybody. Again, reusing what we have. That's really important to us. You know, we don't want to sort of throw things out. It's fine to iterate over them, but again, we want to be able to reuse. You know, so our tools, again, it's the same general tools. One of the challenges, though, we have is, you know, we deploy into a couple different environments. Some are easy to deploy into, you know, public cloud. It's an easier place to deploy into. Some are not. Some are behind firewalls. Some are restricted access. But our software runs in both areas. And we need to be able to create these monitors in such a way that they work in both areas. We don't want to have two sets. One of the challenges that I have for monitoring in general is I want one solution. I don't want six different tools that I then have to go back and reconcile data to and understand the story that the data is telling me. So we looked at building Docker images that contain, maybe not the dashboards, but contain some of the endpoints that the dashboards feed off of, some of the frameworks, some of those pieces that we could then deploy as part of our service to the different environments and have them working. So our initial approach there was to really, you know, again, build the containers containing these frameworks, containing the pieces that Tom just talked about that'll notify when a subsystem's not working and be able to allow us to track the general area that it's not working in. Again, that's going to help us with root cause analysis. It's going to help us understand what our SLIs are. We can start tracking that a little bit better. Making the results accessible through an API for reporting, it makes it extensible. We want our toolbox to be able to be used by anybody. Anybody who wants to hook into it, we want to be able to provide that service. So that's kind of the initial approach that we're on right now. We've done a little bit of work looking at it. But in this area here, our journey still continues. We don't feel that it's at the stage we want it to be. So we're going to keep working on it, keep looking to see not just what we can reuse, but what we can adopt from other teams. And that goes from being sort of a new SRE team within an ecosystem of other SRE teams. What can we learn from all of them? And really be able to reuse some of the tools that they have, understand what they have, and then not just reuse them and, you know, beg, borrow, and steal from them, do something with them, and then feed that back into the larger organization so that everybody benefits. And again, you know, we work in a large company. That's really important to us. It's important to, as I mentioned, the culture, and to get that to change. Not to change, but to evolve. And that's really where our journey is continuing. So there's other teams that are looking at addressing the same challenges that we have, and to try and put those together and try and use, again, our toolbox or our tools. And again, granted, we focused on, you know, a few different areas, but really to make that as useful as possible, make it as open as possible. You know, so, you know, over time, again, it's been a relatively short journey for right now. Hasn't been without its challenges and excitement. It's always to be expected. But I think that, you know, there's really two areas here that you know, are really important. One is to evolve to meet the team's needs. And that should be sort of a capital T, because it's not just meeting the needs of the SRE team. It's meeting the needs of the development teams, meeting the needs of the business. Because ultimately, you know, I've always looked at a lot of this as I provide data. I don't provide the decisions. So my data has to tell the story that I want it to show. And that's why I pick the tools that I pick to help me tell that story, so that we can make a business decision around things. Whether that decision means, you know, is our mean time to recovery trending in the right direction? Is our service availability trending in the right direction? Are there certain components that we need to look at? Because again, you know, we now have the ability to report on at a component level what's failing and what's not, and sometimes intercomponent levels or intercomponents, what piece of that component may not be functioning. And we can do a deeper dive in that. We can do a root cause analysis on those pieces because we used test frameworks, because we used functional tests. And that's kind of how it's all built together. The availability chart, you know, me, I spent a long time working on that. There's no love lost. So the first solution is never the final one. There's always something that's on the horizon, and you always want to strive to that. It doesn't mean that you're in a perpetual state of trying to achieve perfection, because you're never going to reach perfection, which is why you always want to be iterating, always showing visibility, always showing value, especially as you find your tools to put in the toolbox, because you're going to keep going back to them. You're going to go back to the ones that provide the most value you have. Really start with the basics. You know, we're really looking, you know, as we're putting this talk together, a lot of different things that could have come up, a lot of different pieces and parts that could have come up as far as, you know, what's in our toolbox. But it's, you know, it's amazing how quickly the toolbox has expanded, and understanding the challenges that we had early on makes it that much easier to address certain things.
That's about it. You covered it pretty well.
All right.
We'll take any questions for sure. Yeah. Very much interested in to get anybody's feedback on this. Anybody's interested, let us know afterwards. But, yeah, any questions out there, let us know.
Any questions on the toolbox?
I was just curious, when you got all this monitoring set up, how did you measure and account for any performance impact of these repeated every minute tests running against the environment and the IO?
So honestly, we didn't. You know, it's they're basically functional tests. So the way we looked at it is, it was nothing more than customer activity. We did have our operational monitors looking at things, so that if we started to see, you know, in our VMs or something, CPU spikes and memory spikes, we could sort of tail those down a little bit. There were instances, actually, where that monitoring helped us to identify that, hey, we're over-monitoring things. We're running things too quickly. So it was a combination of the two. So the scripts that we were running, while they did provide performance data as well that we could track, it was really the operational monitoring piece that was just day-to-day operational monitoring that we were able to use and to sort of trace that we're over-monitoring, we're putting too much stress on certain pieces of the system. But that's also why, even though they ran every minute, we gave them 30 seconds to say, you know, you're done. You're, you know, there's something that's, there's obviously something that's wrong here, and to report that back.
Cool. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.